Welcome to Pop Off, our occasional bonus edition of Culturetopia, a podcast that features conversations about songs at the top of the charts. I'm Zoe Chase, producer at the Arts Desk, and I've brought a special guest into the studio with me today. I'm sure you recognize the plaintive opening strains of Lady Gaga's Alejandro. Alejandro. I brought Lady Gaga's violinist in to say what's up.
What's up?
Psych, that's Liz Baker, the other production assistant on the Arts Desk. So, Liz, how did you learn the opening notes of Lady Gaga's latest single so quickly?
Well, I've been playing it since I was about 10 years old. It's one of those songs that every violin student has to play at some point or another.
Really? So it's not like, what's the significance of the song? It must be a really significant song because Lady Gaga's using it.
Well, unless she's doing a shout out to all of the Suzuki Method students, I don't know what the significance would be.
So it's not like a really sexy romantic song?
No.
It's a deeply religious song, and she's subverting it, like when she rewinds the camera and her pulling the rosary out of her mouth in the video for the song, and then it looks like she's swallowing it.
No, it's not a religious song.
So she's making some kind of powerful statement by juxtaposing this classical Suzuki Method standard with the decidedly anti-classical, non-Suzuki Method chord progressions of the Swedish pop trio Ace of Base.
That's pretty deep. I don't think so. I can't imagine what the statement would be.
Well, let's turn this over to hip-hop DJ Jay Smooth and music writer Maura Johnston.
Lady Gaga, all of her music to me is vaguely recalled earlier European dance pop tracks. But Alejandro does specifically seem to evoke Ace of Base, especially as far as the image that she projects with all of her costumes and so on. Many people accuse everyone that comes out after Lady Gaga of imitating Gaga.
Right.
Whenever you see a female singer come out with a crazy costume like Christina Aguilera, they're going to be accused of ripping off Lady Gaga. But then people who have an older perspective will say that Lady Gaga's crazy costumes are ripping off Grace Jones or LaBelle or Madonna.
Or David Bowie.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting to a point where it's kind of ridiculous. I heard a new song by Ne-Yo, the R&B singer, and because it had sort of a vaguely dark air and used synthesizers, people were accusing that song of ripping off Lady Gaga. And it's like, okay, you know, we have to sort of reschool everyone on what Lady Gaga did and didn't contribute to the overall pop music culture. She's a monster.
Lady Gaga seems to pride herself on being subversive and provocative, and certainly is successful at that as far as the imagery she puts out there and the statements she makes. But when I listen to her music itself, it comes across as very conservative to me, as if she's trying to make a safe commercial formula that'll go down easy so that she can expose people to her provocation on other levels.
I think that makes sense because you want to get the song on commercial radio, but then if you draw people into the persona, then the restrictions are a bit loosened, especially now that MTV is sort of, you know, completely not a concern anymore. The standards are a lot looser for what can go on Vivo, where it's something that users have to direct themselves to, as opposed to what can go on the radio, which is bound by FCC rules and, you know, various conglomerate standards and practices departments.
Mm-hmm.
So it's sort of this thing where she's working within a structure, but then trying to subvert it. And is it successful? I don't know. I mean, you know, one critique I've always had of her is that there's a lot of heat and light, but I don't know what's at the core.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm waiting to see what's at the core. That's
yeah.
Exactly how I feel about Lady Gaga. Like you've mastered the game and you've worked your way into everyone's living room. Now, are you going to pull back the curtain and let us see the wizard? I want to know that there's a there when I actually listen to her music. And it feels like when I listen to her songs, it feels like she's holding almost all of herself back from me.
you know, this is a woman who named her first album The Fame, right? So she obviously is doing this big project on celebrity.
I mean, when I watch Lady Gaga, sometimes I feel like she's sort of acting out her doctoral thesis on semiotics in the form of an album. But I'm not entirely convinced that she's thought through what all these images mean when she puts them together. It feels like she's throwing more and more things out there and seeing what sticks.
Well, and also, that comes up, too, with ideas of sexuality, where she talks about how she's harnessing her sexual power and, you know, subverting it. But it's sort of like when in the 90s with the Riot Girl penchant for writing epithets about women on parts of your body and how that eventually transformed into baby doll tees with, you know, sort of suggestive slogans on them being sold for $5 in the mall. You know, it's this sort of like, at what point does the subversion just because it's because obviously for it to succeed in the pop marketplace, it has to sort of play by some of the pop marketplace's rules. But at what point does that playing by the subversion within playing by the rules just become playing by the rules? You know, like when she's in the telephone video where she's only wearing caution tape. Is there a statement there? I mean, I'm sure that if you ask her, she'd say that there is. Would she explain it? I don't know.
Right. Yeah. You can only mix subversiveness and commercial instincts for so long before the commercial machine overrides it. When she stands next to Beyoncé, I feel like Lady Gaga is sort of a performance artist who's performing the role of a pop star as opposed to Beyoncé who's being a pop star. It seems like there's three or four more levels of distance and alienation from Gaga.
I mean, it's so funny because, like, on both the songs that they've done together, like, Beyoncé has totally just, like, wiped the floor with her, I think.
Right. I mean, she seems very conscious of playing the role of someone who's trying to achieve superstardom and maintain superstardom, and she's both doing it and providing a commentary on it as she acts out that process.
Right.
Like, there's sort of a meta-narrative that she seems to be playing out the whole time.
It's like she's blogging herself the entire time.
The Beatles of Twist and Shout are obviously very different from the Beatles of Revolver and Sgt. Pepper's and so on. And it may be unfair to expect Lady Gaga to get to Revolver without having her Twist and Shout phase, but there's something about Lady Gaga's phase because she seems to be, whereas the Beatles were drawing from one particular source for Twist and Shout, Lady Gaga is mixing 100 different things together at once and throwing so many things at us, putting this cultural reference next to that one, seeing what it provokes. Mm-hmm. And there's so much noise and so much pyrotechnics created by this constant barrage of references that
Right. It
makes me wonder if there's any there behind it.
It might not be fair to expect a Revolver from a pop star on the first try. I actually think Bad Romance is kind of epic and awesome. I mean, sure, it's definitely a pop song, but I think it's really striking, and it's something that whenever I hear it on the radio, I want, you know, I'm compelled to listen to it.
Bad Romance is irresistible. It's not Sgt. Pepper's, but it definitely makes you want to dance. And maybe that's all Lady Gaga's out to do. That was music writer Maura Johnston and hip-hop video blogger Jay Smooth. And violinist Liz Baker. Okay, show off. Thanks for coming in.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
And thanks for listening to NPR, National Public Radio.